Welcome to Infinite Future, I'm Todd Thomas, and today we're exploring the innovations shaping tomorrow's world. You're watching Now Media TV.
Hello, welcome to Infinite Future, I'm Todd Thomas. On this show, we explore the technologies, ideas, and innovations shaping the world of tomorrow, and how leaders can turn disruption into something useful, sustainable, and human. Today, we're talking about artificial intelligence from a different starting point. The question is not simply which tool to buy, which model to use, or how fast a company can automate. The deeper question is whether the organization actually understands what it is trying to improve and whether its people and decision makers are ready to evolve with the technology. My guest today is Taryn Cutches, co-founder of Join Collective and a business technology and innovation leader whose work sits at the intersection of strategy, human-centered transformation, and AI. In her recent public writing, Taryn has emphasized that access to technology is not the differentiator. Intentional strategy, organizational clarity, and the ability to act are. Taryn, welcome to Infinite Future.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. It's a great topic.
It is. It's kind of the hot topic of the day, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So Taryn, you recently argued that an AI strategy should connect directly to overall business goals and clarify where AI belongs and where does it not belong. Why are so many leaders starting with tools instead of outcomes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a tool is tangible, right? It's a thing you can buy. There's clear, this is what a tool does. You know, this is what I'm expected to get. And, you know, us humans don't really love ambiguity, right? We like concrete. We like clear. A tool is clear. Figuring out, you know, where, how, you know, does AI fit into corporate strategy? How does it contribute to growth? What does all this mean? It's messier. And quite honestly, it's a lot harder than just buying a tool. And so, you know, everybody's, you know, when AI came on the scene, everybody's day jobs didn't just, you know, magically get 25% less demanding. So they had time to figure this out, right? The day-to-day demands of everybody's organization remained. And now on top of it, they have to figure out AI. And so it seems pretty natural that there's a bit of FOMO, fear of, you know, missing out. So buying a tool maybe satisfies that fear, feels like they're making progress in this moment without really taking away and having to figure out the messy middle and the tough thinking of where it all fits in.
So if any organization has access to powerful AI tools, right? They're available, they're on the shelf, you can go grab them. Where does competitive advantage actually come from now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think especially with maybe more mid-size or early stage companies, strategy used to be, I wouldn't say somewhat optional because it's always been necessary, right? But it was maybe a bit easier to kind of figure out of, you know, what we're going to do. I think how you're going to use AI, AKA strategy, and that's a loaded word, right? When we say strategy, to us, it could take the form of a roadmap. It could take the form of a one-pager. It could take the form of a priority list of things you're going to focus on, right? Like we don't get so hung up in the nuance of that word, but whatever format it takes, what it accomplishes is it's an intentional and thoughtful approach to how you're going to differentiate yourself in the market. So that full circle is actually the strategy, or how you're going to use AI becomes the differentiator because it's intentional and it's thoughtful. You have to execute on it, of course. But just having the tool, to your point, it's how you're going to uniquely and creatively and strategically use it to differentiate yourselves and grow your business.
So what you're really talking about is focus on strategy opposed to focus on AI for the sake of AI. And I know there's lots of companies out there, like you just mentioned, that have, you know, FOMO around AI. They're scared to miss it. Mm-hmm. But what you're really emphasizing is the importance of understanding the current state of business, people, processes, data, friction, and customer experience. So what should an honest current state assessment reveal before someone can start to build an AI roadmap, or even determine if AI is something they need?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. think it should reveal how work gets done and how information flows through your organization. And then either where the friction points are or where kind of the data handoff or handoff to teams is missing, right? Where there's a gap in it. That like everybody has to be grounded in a current state, because what we've found, current state feels somewhat obvious because everybody's reality of their own current state is so deeply known to them. But who has really intentionally gone and looked across a workflow or across an organization with a current state lens to see it holistically? We found the answer is almost nobody. And so what, because everybody, right, they have their own focus areas and they understand their current state. So the value of it, sometimes organizations maybe overlook, because it's like, we know our current state, just tell us how to fix it. It's like, you don't though, from a holistic point of view. And so just really understanding where is the data flowing, where is there friction points, where is this taking more time than needed? Where are there strategic opportunities? If you visualize that and bring it, you know, across multiple leaders and multiple teams, I think visualizing it is key. And how, you know, however you do that with, you know, indicators or icons or et cetera, all of a sudden it becomes really clear of like, oh wow, when it comes to the point of where the design team hands off to engineering, there is a ton of friction, right? The designers don't get the file format and the engineers can't do it and there's back and forth. It's like, okay, this is an area, it kind of surfaces and starts giving you your priority focus areas for how AI may alleviate it.
So now there's a difference between using AI to automate tasks versus mm-hmm. what I think you're beginning to touch on, which is kind of rethinking entire workflows and automating those workflows to really drive more than just incremental improvements. So how does an organization identify, you know, what are the workflows that they really need to not just automate, but completely redesign?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a similar process. It's just an order of fidelity, right? If you're trying to start and you're looking across the entire organization, you know, break out your process steps in pretty big phases. So there's business development, some type of, you know, production if you're in, you know, manufacturing, then there's delivery, right? Just break it up. Maybe there's logistics. Break it up into fairly large segments of your organization if you're looking across, you know, holistically, and just start to go and talk to people within each of those. Understand where are the biggest friction points. Where do the people boots on the ground feel like the biggest missed opportunities are? You know, kind of do some industry benchmarking, see where some of your competitors and peers are making advancements in AI, and just come to a point, and it quickly starts to reveal itself of where you should focus. I think also connecting back to your organization's strategic plan is a signal. So if your organizational strategic plan, you know, has something around customer centricity, and you find that business development is a huge pain point, those synergies, right, might steer you to focus and narrow in on that portion of the organization. And once you've narrowed in your focus of where, you know, within our work stream or our value stream do we focus, then you go that one layer deeper. And you kind of assess how is the process really happening, where there's the most friction, you know, where are there opportunities to leverage more data? Where are we missing data? And it starts to reveal itself, but you should never start with the tool. The tool ends up being the thing that, once you're clear on where you're at and where you want to go, the right tool should fit into solving your business problem versus starting with a tool and figuring out how you inject it into your workflows.
I agree with that completely. I phrase it slightly differently. I usually say mm-hmm. start with the problem and let yep. the problem define the solution. Don't start with yep. the solution and go to look for the problem. But yeah, I completely agree.
Exactly.
Same method, yep. just
exactly.
phrased a little bit differently.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So when an organization is doing that assessment, who all should be involved in that assessment and who all should they go out and talk to within the organization?
Yeah. So it's so funny. We, in times of major disruption, you know, paradoxes tend to present themselves in really funny ways. So one of the paradoxes we were just talking about is like, you need enough input from, you know, from a wide range of people, and you also need to be able to move quickly. And it's like those two things need to be true at the same time. So how do you do that? To us, I think aligning on a on some sort of steering team, right? Typically 5 to 7 people, organization size, you know, can take that up a couple clicks or down a couple clicks, but just really aligning on kind of a core team of who's going to go out and do that. And that team has to have trust and buy-in from leadership that they'll gather the appropriate level of inputs, but also have decision authority so things can move forward. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in a never-ending discovery process.
So where is the line between AI experimentation and discovery? And what does innovation look like that really becomes meaningful business evolution?
Yeah. We take a portfolio approach. And so, right, when we think about AI, I think there's a healthy amount of experimenting and piloting. They should all be in the service of, you know, an outcome that somebody's trying to achieve. And then there's probably a handful of really strategic initiatives, right, that take form. We've seen a lot, sometimes 70-30 split, 70 meaning more strategic initiatives, 70 meaning not quantity in the, but effort, you know, complexity, et cetera. So about 70% of your efforts should maybe be focused on more, or 60 be focused on more kind of strategic, really intentional business evolution. And, you know, the 30-40 should be a lot of small experiments and pilots kind of happening in the background that will inform what your strategic priorities end up being.
So again, the focus really on strategic priorities, not on the tool. I love that perspective. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
Welcome back to Infinite Future. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS, or you can catch live streaming or podcast versions of the show anytime you like at nowmedia.tv. Another housekeeping item, as a lot of you folks know, I've written a number of books on AI and innovation and energy. I have a new book coming out. It's called Starving for Innovation. And this new book is by far my most personal book. I still talk a lot about AI and energy and innovation, but we really open up the kimono and share the genesis of Woodchuck. How did it start? What are the things that we got right? What are the mistakes that we made? And really use Woodchuck as a template so you can learn from our mistakes on how to build your own startup and have some success. So go to Amazon.com and search for Starving for Innovation and order your copy today. Now we're back with Taryn Cutchess, co-founder of Join Collective. Before the break, we talked about why a tool is not a strategy and why leaders need clarity before they accelerate. Taryn's most recent public LinkedIn post makes the next challenge especially clear. Even a strong technology solution creates limited value if the people around it continue working exactly as they did before. Adoption is not simply training people where to click. It is changing behaviors, routines. It can include changing incentives, decision patterns, and the way teams understand their own work. So Taryn, you recently made the point that new technology and AI solutions only become effective when the behaviors and ways of working around them change. Why is behavior change often harder than the implementation itself?
People are at the center, right? I mean, people, humans, you know, a lot of what's really interesting is the technology is changing at a much faster rate than humans are ready to adapt and change with it, right? And so we're creatures of habit. When you think about it, right, you show up to work, you know what's expected of you, you know how to do your job, you know what's being measured, you know what's important, and there's a level of comfort with that. And arguably in today's world, right, even outside of work with all the unknowns, I think even more so people are holding on to the comfort of the workplace because it's something that they know. Right, it's something that they're familiar with. And so it's always been in any digital transformation, any industrial revolution, it's always been the people, right? And this moment in time is really no different.
So what signals do you look for? What signals tell you an organization may be technically ready for AI, but not behaviorally ready for a new way of working?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, when we're meeting with an organization, if they're overly focused on the features and functionality of the tool, and they're talking about seats, and they're talking about licensings, and they're talking about cost of the tools, and everything is so tool focused, that right there is an immediate trigger, you know, for us to think, oh yeah, this isn't there. Yet we walk into some other organizations and they're acutely aware that, you know, behavior change is equally as important as the technology. And we've gone back and forth at Join of like, is it more important? Is the tech more important? And have debated this thoroughly. And we've landed like, you need equally both. You need, there's really no shortcut, right? If you had an organization that was ready for change and willing, and everybody was leaning all in and highly innovative, but you didn't have the tools and technologies to support it, it's like, that's not going to get you anywhere. And you take the inverse, right? You have this organization that has the latest and greatest tech, all the tools available, yet nobody's willing to really lean in and do something with it and kind of evolve with them. Again, you end up in the same place you did with having the people ready. And so it truly has to be an equal balance. And it's perplexing to me, because when you go and when you study previous major innovations like the internet, right? The historical data proves over and over and over again that people and behavior change end up being the limiting factor to successful, you know, value creation. Yet, even in the age of AI, organizations are mostly investing in the tools and technology and underinvesting in the change management and kind of strategy side of all of this. And so, you know, on one hand, it's interesting to break down, and logically, it doesn't add up. But again, going back to humans, are not always logical human beings and tend to make decisions more emotionally. So it's just really the people at the heart of it.
Do you find that that's a cultural issue within a business? Are there businesses that have a culture of, you know, welcoming or embracing change and others that don't?
Yeah, definitely to an extent, right? I think by and large, most organizations and most people are not as open to change as they would like to be. But there are definitely organizations we've worked directly with that lean into it and understand all the dynamics of it much, much clearer than others. Understand that the technology is a 50% part of the equation versus it being 70 or 80% of the equation. And organizations that understand that tend to have a higher degree of success with actually implementing valuable tools and workflows.
So how can today's leaders really create an environment that improves adoption and helps people to identify and make those behavioral changes?
Yeah, I think for any leader, when you're thinking about either time or financial investment into a new activity, you need to think about the tool, the solution, the product at an equal percentage as you think about the behavior change, the learning loops, the collaboration, the strategy, and the planning. Like we need to course correct this 80% on the tech, and oh, some of that other stuff will follow, or it'll just fit into place naturally. We have to start thinking about those things equal, and your time and your financial investment needs to match that, right? And we need to start thinking about mechanizing behavior change and change management and strategy, right? A lot of people talk about it, and as far as mechanizing it, it's like, oh yeah, we've put together a committee, you know, that shares. It's like there needs to be a heck of a lot more thoughtfulness and intentionality of how are you going to build in learning loops? What are the specific cadences you're meeting? How are you going to check in with your team on how they're feeling, and how are you going to measure that? Like the same rigor and focus as corporate level strategy planning almost needs to kind of come down to when you're talking about, you know, building a new workflow or implementing a new tool. And so it's just that's going to force you, that's going to force you to prioritize as well, because you're going to quickly realize you don't have, you know, you don't have the time and the space to do everything. And so again, going back to why prioritization and strategy matters so much more, is because we can't keep giving a portion of the focus to change enablement and behavior change.
So change enablement really becomes an extension of strategy, prioritization, and planning.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. If you're thinking about a tech investment, we're going to invest, I don't know, $50,000 into AI licenses for the team, you better have an equal $50,000 that you're injecting into change enablement, right? And be thinking about what does that look like, right? What does that look like in terms of resources, in terms of tools, and in terms of, you know, mechanisms to do that really well. You can't have one without the other.
You recently highlighted an example you saw as positive AI evolution, because the story was about growth and people, not simply reducing headcount. Mm-hmm. What should responsible redeployment of human capacity look like when AI removes routine work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the example you're referring to is IKEA. So IKEA published, you know, an announcement that they used AI to replace customer service representatives. But instead of replacing and then removing them, they replaced them and they reskilled them into be interior design consultants, right, or some flavor of that. And so not only did that, you know, save costs on the customer service side, it also unlocked totally new revenue in a space that they can contribute significant value. And it gave, for those interested, those customer service representatives a whole new experience and way to deliver kind of their skills and their ability by just furthering them as learning a new skill, right? And engaging in new things. That's such a positive thing. And so when we think about, sure, of course there's opportunities to, you know, make processes more efficient, what we're seeing a lot of leaders start thinking about now is, if we were to, you know, remove a certain portion of this work or think about it differently, how might we, you know, it's a phrase very often used in innovation, but how might we rethink where this person, how this person contributes to our strategy, right? Our growth goals, our, what does this look like for that person, that team, et cetera. It should always kind of be, the end goal should not be replacement, right? 100%. The end goal should be optimize and then re-optimize their skills and their contributions in a whole new way.
Well, I think we're seeing that the data is coming back in, that companies that are embracing AI as a force multiplier, yeah, not a human being or reducer, are having the most success. Mm-hmm. And they're really embracing AI to, again, get rid of some of those menial tasks or routine tasks, and then freeing up their resources to spend, yeah, more time with the client, to put more time into, yeah, strategy thought, but really, you know, improving the quality of the workplace. Yeah. And again, yeah, not reducing headcount, but improving throughput.
Yeah, and through our work, right, a lot of work we do is talk with teams and leaders to understand, you know, where the friction points are in their organization. And throughout this year, we've talked with hundreds of teams, right, in different industries, from automotive manufacturing to architecture, engineering, and construction to professional service firms. And I can tell you 95% of the people we talk to wish they could do more strategic and more valuable work. So I'm confident in saying that majority of people want to contribute to their organizations in a much more meaningful way than they are today. And AI actually gives us the ability to maybe to do that, and to ground it in a really tangible example. I was talking to an architect engineer, and I said, if I could free up 20% of your day, what would you do? And his response is, I would go to the job site and I would touch the dirt. And for some reason, that has stuck with me, because it was just such a tangible reminder that AI could never go to a job site and touch the dirt, right? And so it's a bit of, there's, you know, there's a lot of areas where only humans can drive unique value. And I think it's just a great reminder that we can figure out a way, if we're intentional, about how we use AI to unlock moments like that and really let people kind of live into their full potential and contribute more strategically, which hopefully leads to growth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right, for organizations and communities.
That is an inspiring view of AI. Thank you so much. Yeah. That's
we need
fantastic.
More of that.
We do. We need more of that. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
We're back with Taryn Kutches. So far, we've talked about strategy, current state clarity, and the behavior change required to make technology stick. Now we're moving into the next frontier. Taryn has recently been part of conversations about artificial intelligence agents and the growing possibility that software may not only recommend actions, but make or execute increasingly consequential decisions. That changes the leadership question from can technology do this to who should be allowed to decide, under what rules, and who remains accountable for the system acts. So Taryn, you again have recently been discussing where and how AI agents may make strategy decisions on our behalf. Where should leaders draw the line between recommendation, execution, and actual decision authority?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such an interesting topic because, right, a leadership practice that's been promoted for, you know, decades has been informed decision-making, right? Data-driven decisions. And so we're in this business climate where we all have access to loads of data, more than we probably have ever before. So you would think that data-driven decision-making actually becomes easier now because we have access to the data. But what's revealing itself is in practice, it's actually a heck of a lot harder because when you have so much data to sift through, you can almost find an argument, a data point, a business case to argue both sides of a decision. And it ends up turning things around even more so. So human judgment in any decision making is actually increasing in importance and criticality for leaders because there's so much decision making. I think decisions, day-to-day decisions, kind of tactical business decisions, I think are okay. When you start getting into strategic decisions, I think those should always be human led. I think they can be data informed, they can be, you know, AI assisted, but they should always be made with a human in the loop. I, you know, when you start talking about how strategic, right, there's a couple layers to that, but I don't think AI agents are going to replace strategic decision making.
So what decision rights should be made explicit before an organization gives an AI agent autonomy?
Yeah, I think it has to come down to what are you asking it to do? I think decisions that are pretty binary, you know, yes or no, based on a rigid set of criteria, make a lot of sense for AI to do, right? There's not of a lot of interpretation. There's not a lot of complexity into the decision, right? In a manufacturing line, for example, you know, is this part good or is this part bad based on this set of criteria? I can go to the right or left depending on, you know, if it meets that. Okay, an AI agent is probably pretty good at that, actually probably arguably better than humans are. Or hey, does this meet these requirements? Maybe it's an RFQ process and you're looking for very concrete things if it meets or not, and it's a binary, it's yes or no. I think when you start introducing multiple scenarios and decisions, of course, that impact, you know, humans in the trajectory of your organizations, letting an AI agent make those on anybody's behalf is a bit dangerous.
So what are the decisions that should always remain distinctly human?
Did you say what are the decisions?
Yeah, what are the specific decisions that we should never turn over to AI?
When I think about strategic decisions, it's how do we grow our organizations? What areas do we need to grow in capability for our organization? What should we prioritize, right? Our focus areas should be, should we outsource manufacturing? Should we invest in another location, right? These big strategic decisions, should we hire this person? I don't think an AI agent should make that decision. I think that should be human. Should we engage with this client? I don't think it should be an AI decision. I think it should be a human. Those sorts of things where the answer isn't always so clear, black and white, based on a set of criteria.
Well, so that's interesting. You mentioned kind of a couple different elements of HR there. And I wonder if in that particular realm, it hasn't already gone too far. Like most resume reviews today are done by AI. There's not a lot of companies that still have people doing that, right? They're feeding hundreds of resumes or thousands of resumes, and they're getting a select group that AI selects for them that they're going to actually review. Have we already gone too far on the HR front?
I think time will tell. I think time will tell. At an initial screening, I tend to believe it's okay, because in that instance, there is a more defined set of criteria. If AI was making the decision, I would expand or maybe shrink, however you look at it, the bounds of that criteria. So for example, in the case of hiring somebody, if you know you need somebody, absolutely must have, you know, that has a bachelor's degree or higher, okay, you know, AI can help us make the decision, like if there's no ifs, ands, or buts. And so if you're going from a pool of 1,000 resumes down to 100 based on a strict set of criteria, to me is where I feel okay. But then once you get to that point of should we hire this person, that's where I feel like, you know, humans need to be in the loop. I also think customer experience is another really interesting area. We talked about the IKEA example, but I think we've all been, you know, victim to like, just give me a person to talk to. This AI bot is not understanding. They're not giving me everything. And so I wonder if we've also gone too far in that area. And I think the trick is thinking about the experience both from, you know, your team and also the person who's on the receiving end of that experience.
I think another element of that, particularly around the customer service area, is transparency. I think we're still seeing some companies that are putting bots out there and they want you to believe it's a real person. And clearly it isn't, and you're not buying it, but they won't like admit it and just let you talk to a person. And I think that creates a really bad customer experience.
Yes, I was on the receiving end of, well, actually a really good AI bot, but a really terrible experience. So it was an organization that was selling something, and I was actually curious to learn more about their service. And so I wanted to jump on a schedule a call. And so I get on this call, and it's a video call with very much in the similar setting we are. And it was a human, well, I thought, for the first like minute or two. And all of a sudden I'm thinking like, this is so bizarre. The mannerisms weren't quite right. But if somebody who works in AI day in, day out, they did a really good job. But it was so off-putting to me to think like, could they not have just disclosed, you know, that this was an AI? It's like they were faking it to be a human. And it was such a terrible feeling to be on the receiving end of it, right? It was just kind of, you really start to question humanity, right? In that moment, to be on that side of it. And it was just the first time I had experienced something like that. And again, sales is another area where have we gone too far with using these tools.
So a good example of that, I had an educational experience recently where we had a couple of different professors and a couple of different teacher assistants. And then there were also AI teacher assistants, but they were very clear about it up front. And they let you know, you know, like, yeah, you can call Taryn and she's a real person, and you can talk to her, or, but here are these, you know, AI bots that you can use.
Yeah.
And the AI bots were really helpful. Like if you just needed specific information or specific instructions, the AI bots were great for that. I really appreciated that they were very clear of,
yes, you know,
these are your human TAs that you can call, and these are your AI bots that you can use. And they use them for different things. I thought it was a really good experience.
Yeah, and I think getting perspective from AI and from a human on a topic is so valuable, right? They pull out different things, but you know, in a lot of our, we're talking about decision making, we do get perspective from AI in a lot of cases, and often it uncovers an element of the decision or an angle of the decision that we weren't considering. So I think the practice of consulting with AI or gaining perspective of AI in decisions is valuable and helpful. It's just making that decision without the human in the loop is where it starts to concern me a little bit.
Yeah, and I think also to raise the general level of information on a topic, you know, AI mm-hmm. can be very helpful yeah. on that.
Great.
And kind of setting up or teeing up a really good conversation where mm-hmm. AI has given everybody the background information so you come into the discussion informed and ready to give an opinion.
Exactly.
Agreed. So what does responsible governance look like for a company that wants to experiment quickly with agentic AI without losing human oversight?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it all comes, you have to be intentional and make the time and the space and put the focus on how you and your organization want to use AI, right? How is it aligned and how is it not aligned to your values? Question one. What information are you willing to share with it? What information are you not willing to share with it? And what are the trigger points that signal, you know, more stakeholders need to be in the room or bigger decisions need to be made? It's, you know, everybody wants this rule book. Here's your rule book for governance. And I go back to like, it has to be aligned to your personal and your organizational values and what you're comfortable with. And you have to take the time to develop that.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, we're going to learn a little bit more about how Terran and Join Collective can help your company. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
Welcome back. We've talked about AI strategy, behavior change, and the moment when intelligent systems begin participating in decisions. In this final segment, I want to look back beyond adoption and ask what kind of organization can keep evolving as the technology keeps changing. Terran's work through Join Collective focuses on helping companies become more adaptable by aligning business architecture with the human side of transformation. The opportunity is not simply to automate today's organizations, it is to redesign how people process data, creativity, and intelligent systems working together to create net value. So, Terran, when you look 10 years ahead, what will separate an organization that is merely AI-enabled from one that is generally adaptive? And we might need to shrink that time frame. Maybe 10 years is way too far. What does an organization,
who knows,
2 years from now look like?
Yeah. You know, from our talking about the future, I'll just caveat this. It's our best guess, right, at yeah. this point. But I think what's going to be the differentiator is maybe less about how many tools you have or how many automations you have. And it's about the capabilities and the skills you're building with your own team members. And so when we talk about adaptability at Join Collective, it's maybe not a foreign word, but it's also probably not the most common word yet in the business landscape. But when we just take a step back and look at, you know, what were the features of successful organizations historically? And a lot of it is fairly linear, right? It's, they were really solid in their plan, they executed on their plan, and they achieved their results. As we look forward to now, and on 10 years, 5 years from now, things are changing at a rate that's been faster than ever before. And so the new skill is less about setting a 3, 5, 10-year plan and executing to that plan. It's more about having a vision for where you want to go, but adapting of how you get there, you know, as you learn. And so when we think what makes an adaptive organization, we've defined kind of five capabilities that make those make an organization adaptive. The first one we call is foresight, the ability, right, to like look ahead and understand trends and have the ability to like think outside of your organization, right? Think outside, think in the future. Second is collaboration, learning really well how to work across your team. So many organizations still work in silos. The third is learning, the skill of learning, right? Of genuinely learning what you did, what worked, what didn't work, what your competitors do, what did, what didn't work. The skill of execution, being able to actually follow through and execute on what you said you were going to do. There's a lot of strategic plans, right, that kind of falter when you get to the implementation point. They fall down. And so, right, there's these skills that make up being an adaptable organization. And to me, the companies that invest in building those skills are going to be better positioned as new technologies continue to kind of come knocking on our front door, because they're going to build the ability to kind of think creatively and think differently and learn of how do we use those to achieve our business goals versus thinking about it from a tool perspective.
That's a brilliant framework. I love that framework. And I love the kind of the double click you did on execution. One of my favorite phrases has always been, Execution is the chariot of genius. I yeah. love that phrase.
Yes.
Because I think you're right. So many companies have great intentions and maybe even great strategy, but they stumble on the execution.
Yep, 100%, 100%. And again, you think of the amount of time and investment in strategy planning, right? It's a recognized business practice of, you know, we're going to go to offsite and we're going to collect signals and we're going to collect data. We're going to put together this map. But when you think about what happens after the strategy, that's way less prioritized or mechanized. It just is like, well, that's what leaders do. And you know, we'd love for a world where there's more kind of emphasis on that. There's a practice right there. There's a methodology. There's a way to execute and learn and do it in a way that has, you know, rigorous business practices, just like setting a strategy does.
So what are some of the things that you can do or Join Collective does to help clients with that execution piece, to help them be ready and really embrace the execution piece?
Yep. Yeah. So we have what we call a strategic orchestration framework that we've codified and put together. And we're working right now alongside a number of organizations where they have a handful of initiatives running in parallel that are all contributing to a larger strategic plan or larger vision. But by design, each initiative is somewhat siloed, right, in the way the organization works. And there isn't anybody who's connecting the dots across all of them. And so that is what our strategic orchestration framework does. And what that looks like is there's a set of charters where every initiative is kind of getting asked the same questions and has the same level of focus. And then Join, as a kind of accountability and change enablement partners within the strategic orchestration, meets one-on-one with leaders in your team who are responsible for the initiative, kind of monthly, bi-weekly. And we talk with that leader of how is implementation going? Are you getting it done? We talk about change and behavior, like where are you running into resistance with your team? Where are people not understanding this? You know, what pushback are you getting? And then we look across value delivery, like is the work you're doing delivering on the value you thought it would? And we together kind of work through, help them get unstuck, connect dots a bit organically between those sessions, and then add a particular cadence. Those, you know, 7-5 cross-functional people we bring together and can share across all the work. Here's what we're seeing. Here's opportunities for you guys to lean in. And it's created a different level of execution, sharing, alignment. It's that adaptability, capability building, right? That we talked about, because there is a mechanism, there's a focus, and there's a priority on executing the strategy, not just saying, okay, go do it.
Have you had clients or companies that you've worked with where you've taken them through that methodology and it's gone well, but the answer wasn't necessarily an AI solution? And how did they respond to that?
Yes, very much so. And so part of it is, you know, our operating model at Join Collective, and we've touched on this throughout this conversation, is that every organization has two architectures. There's your business architecture, which is your process, your tools, your data. It's the tangible stuff. And then there's your behavior architecture. And that's people's willingness to change, right? That's their mindsets. It's how they show up every day. And so when we're looking at a workflow or how data is flowing through an organization or doing some of that initial assessment, we look through those two lenses and we ask the question, is this a business architecture problem or is this a behavioral architecture problem? And so we were just meeting with a client and they thought that they needed a new ERP, you know, solution or a new functionality within their ERP. And what we actually found was, your tool does exactly what you need it to do. The breakdown is in your behavior architecture. Mm-hmm. The breakdown is in, you know, X, Y, and Z team members actually skip this step, which leads to a waterfall cascade of impacts, you know, that are frustrating. But we look through that lens and diagnose it. Is it behavioral or is it a business architecture root cause? So that you don't, because if you fix something that's a behavioral problem with a business solution, you're just going to end up in the same position you were before. And so that's a really important distinction.
That's actually hilarious because I literally was in a meeting this week with my team and we were looking at CRM systems and nobody was happy with our current system. And so we were talking about all these different systems that we could use and how all this improvement it would drive. And at the end of the conversation, it came down that the solution that everybody preferred had almost the exact functionality as the system features we already have, just nobody was using it. No one was going through the process of
taking the time
correctly.
Of documenting and
So that's hilarious. Anyway, it strikes my good timing.
You feel validated.
So for leaders that are watching right now and who know that their organizations need to evolve, but they feel overwhelmed by the possibilities, what are some immediate steps that a leader can take to prepare themselves and their organization to kind of begin this venture of trying to make these improvements?
Yep. I think step number one is document, like, and just get really clear on your why. Why do you want to evolve? Why do you feel like you need to evolve? That often, right, lowers the anxiety of there's so much to do. When the why becomes really clear, it almost drives excitement versus it driving, you know, fear or overwhelm. So that's step one is figure out your why. Step two is once you're able to get clear on what you're going to prioritize and what you are not, it gets way more exciting because we get overwhelmed by the amount of decisions we have to make. We were just in an AI roadmap project. And at the start of it, right, this organization had tried to figure out how they were going to use AI in a really kind of intentional way over the last, you know, 6 months to a year. They've done a lot of pilots, a lot of overwhelm. And so when we first started, right, the why was really clear. They had settled on the why and it was to further advance kind of their work and the region. And there was a really tangible component. And everybody was just like, well, we do it this way. And there was overwhelm. And once we went through the process and at the end walked through, like, these are the 3 to 5 things you're going to prioritize in now, near and next is the time horizons we use. The conversations flip to, I am so excited to get started. I can't wait to do this. I'm so excited. And so the process of going through that, you get your why and you get your priorities, and it becomes less of a burden to figure out and more of an excitement to see how you're going to get to the outcome you defined.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Taryn.
Thank you.
If people want to follow you and get in touch with you and perhaps have you come and help their organizations, where do they follow you? How do they get in touch with you?
Yes, you can follow me on LinkedIn, Taryn Kuches, Kutches. Would love to connect with you there. And then Join Collective is joincollective.com. Would love to connect with you there. And you can send us an email directly at hello@joincollective.com.
Fantastic. Well, really enjoyed the conversation today. Learned a lot. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
just one more note. I was just thinking, Joanne Garvin, your partner and co-founder. I love her book on innovation, and I actually quote her multiple times in my new book. So if you're a fan of Joanne's,
amazing.
Another reason to go get my book.
yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, awesome. Thanks so much. Say hello to Joanne and everybody watching. We'll see you next week.
Great. Thank you.